before we get into the show this week, I just want to do a special PSA to thank my boy Ben Karpinski for an awesome, awesome weekend. As you guys heard him last week talking all of that, it's going to be easy. It's going to be a walkover. Before we get into today's show, I just want my handshake. I just want the handshake, Ben. We will unpack this handshake later on in the show.
That was a gentleman's handshake, was it not?
It was good.
Unlike your barbs after your team finally wins something.
Look, you got to win them, and I told you that. We got to win them, but we're going to get more into that later on in the show. Today, we're going to switch it up a little bit, talk about something that myself and Ben are super, super excited to discuss. We're going to talk about Netflix entry into the sports broadcasting game. Me and you are back and forthing about it, so we did bring in an expert to help us unpack it. We've had them do the NFL. We've had them do WWE, now Monday Night Raw. And previously, you know, to a little bit of success, we had them do Jake Paul and the Mike Tyson fight. So we're going to unpack whether this is a flash in the pan or if this is something for them to stay. And then I'm going to introduce our expert. Jean is going to help us unpack this with us. Ben, welcome to another week of On The Bounce, episode 31. What's up, my brother? Let's talk about it.
I love the way that you went from fanatical, sweaty Man United fan to, and this week on the show.
I'm getting badass at this.
That's brilliant, eh? Yeah, so Jean Villers is going to be with us today on the show. He's on mic number 3 on the far side of the couch.
Yes, that's him.
Still Jean? Waiting for the expert to join us.
So, before I sort of retaliate with the initial barbs around Arsenal, I've known Jean for, it's going on 10 years now,
yeah,
I would say.
Before you had a golf swing.
No,
I've always had a golf swing. It's not good.
Love somebody who's going to give Ben a bit of banter about that golf swing.
But I first met Jean when he was working for Nielsen South Africa. So he's been very involved in what's happening within sport. You then went over to TNW. They were the MD there. And you are now with Capitalized Media. So basically, when it comes to selling commercial stories around sports and all the things that are involved around sports broadcasting production and what audiences and people care about, Jean's our guy. Not only that, he's also a sports fan like us. So he actually cares about what really happens there and not just the rants and sense of it. Okay. Yes, well done. Man United won.
No, that's not it. We're still going to unpack that a little bit later.
I just want to say well done.
Oh.
You know what?
I'm also a United fan, so good to be on the same couch.
I knew it.
Good
I
handshake.
Shout out.
I wasn't going to ask you because I knew you were, but I wasn't going to open the conversation. So, Sandile, I think I'll go a step further.
Right.
For the clip drift, that's gold moment of the week. To be Man United finally getting a goalkeeper.
I would like to
How good was that, Eric?
I'd like to even give a deeper shout out for that gold moment. It's got to be new Man United legend, Kai Havertz. We've got to thank Kai Havertz for, you know, really stepping up as a Man United supporter and fan. We clearly know that you loved Sir Alex in your youth and David Beckham, because there's no ways you missed all of those chances and then dessert on top, miss the penalty. So Kai Havertz, you are my that's gold moment for the weekend.
Well, it was, I'll be the bigger person here and say, well done, it was great. What do I get from Sandile? Cry me a river. All of these hard things. I'm trying to deal with it, get through the most on a Monday. Okay, so we've acknowledged that.
Cool.
We've also got to acknowledge last week's poll. We asked, is Arsenal going to win any kind of trophy this year? Final results: 3% said yes, 50% said no.
Close tie at the
and
bottom.
And 47% just said lol.
Oh. My fans of LOL, I appreciate you so much for making it a very tight battle there.
I guess that was the precursor here. Our ex-poll then went into Arsenal absolutely shitting the bed in the FA Cup third round. Okay, so we've got all...
Which trophies are they still in?
The big ones. The Carabao Cup, Champions League.
Aren't you 2-0 down?
Premier League. Arsenal either score one goal or five goals. That's how good teams roll.
Look, I think, Ben, like I said, I'm going to have enough time for you to stew on this. I'd like to get into the meat of that.
Okay, look, we've got through all the housekeeping for the show today. I'm actually really excited about this topic, of course, having Jean with us in the studio today, because the way sport has changed over our sort of years, I'm not going to give more edge away too much here, but there was a time when my sport go-to was the newspaper. Growing up in Cape Town, I used to read the Cape Times on a Thursday. I got team sheets and I'd watch the games on Saturday. And we're now at the stage where sport is a blockbuster entertainment spectacle. So we take a little break, and we get back into that with Sunday Lanjon.
Yes, welcome back to the show. I think in order, Ben, for us to get into the meat of this Netflix transition, we've got to give everyone a bit of historical context. Netflix traditionally did not want to play in sports. Ed Red Hastings initially said that he doesn't want to get into a bidding war about rights for sports like every other broadcaster did, as we've seen it with Amazon Prime and all the other, you know, streaming platforms. But then subsequently, they changed the direction, moving into firstly the sports documentary section and now moving into the, you know, live sports streaming. You know, Jean, I'm going to turn it over to you and ask you, are you surprised about such the immediate shift into, you know, sports broadcasting and the sports documentary aspect? Yeah.
No, I guess not. I think that Netflix have been in this game for a while with sports documentaries. I think the shift that's happening is into live sport.
Yeah.
They have been in the sporting game for a while. They literally turned Formula One around,
yeah,
and made it a global sensation. And as you know, if it wasn't for the Netflix Drive to Survive series, Formula One wouldn't be where it is,
yeah,
today. So they've been in sport for a while, and now they're dabbling into this live sporting arena, and seeing if it'll work or not. They've had a few glitches here and there with streaming and latency, and you know, watching that fight in the middle of the night wasn't great.
It wasn't ideal, yeah.
But their market is there, their community is there. They've got this captured audience, and at the end of the day, they're fighting, as are all the broadcasters around the world,
yeah,
for a community, and they want to keep that community on their platform. So, what's the future of it? Where are they going with it? Let's see. You know, 2027, 2031 Women's World Cup, they've already got those,
yeah,
rights. So that's taking a long bet in that. It looks like the US is a big market for them.
100%.
So, you know, is it going to be a South African, you know, are we going to have a PSL match on Netflix soon? Maybe not.
Yep.
Is their market US? Is their market China? Is their market going across Europe? That's probably where they're going to play, and not potentially Africa.
Yeah, so jump in there. The Netflix that we get here in South Africa, like all other countries, is very different to the other Netflix. Like geographically, yeah, zoned, the programming is quite different. That's what people always say, get a VPN because then you can see whatever else is watching. But no, I mean, like, would that be – it sounds weird, like, would they get a PSL match? But, I mean, that could just be one of those things. Like, you know, from creating these shows is that you want to create localized content that costs money. So would it maybe be a prudent play to say, just again to your point, you want to keep communities on here. Would a prudent play maybe just go, you know what, we can spend 10 mil on like a sitcom or a rom-com or something, or we can broadcast two or three of these matches. Like, do you think that that's maybe something they can actually do to get more into these sort of local markets?
Look, I think if we have to use a case study in the South African space and African space, look at what Showmax have done.
Yep.
They now have more and more sport in the streaming space. Started with the English Premier League. They've got the Betway Prem on there now. They dabbled a bit around the Olympic Games. And we'll probably see more and more sport into that space. And that's going to be, I guess, DSTV multi-choices play into the streaming market. South Africa, are we ready there yet? Are we ready to stream stuff on our phones? Are data costs there yet? I guess those are the different questions that we've got to ask in the local market, and not necessarily can Netflix buy the rights to the PSL, can Netflix buy the rights to the URC. They could probably afford that, and if we had to convert it to US dollars, it's probably not that much.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Are the consumers going to stay on? Are the consumers going to tune in week in, week out? And at the moment, they're still doing a Christmas match. They're doing a one WWE match, which viewership numbers were great, but they're doing these coming in and going out, coming in and going out. It's not we're going to buy the full season. We're going to buy, you know, 3 or 4 years worth of content that we're going to make sure every week we've got to turn it up, and we've got to ensure that on a Tuesday night there's a PSL match on somewhere in Richards Bay. You know, now it's going to be a Netflix. You'll have four people watching it. You know, they're not there yet, I guess, in that space. And Showmax are, you know, the initial reports that are coming out from a Showmax point of view is proving that it's not easy. It's not an easy place to go on to streaming. It's not an easy place, even if you've got the English Premier League, you've got the Betway Prem on there.
Yeah.
It's not just going to be the golden bullet to say, you know, let's save multi-choice and put everything on Showmax, and everyone's going to switch over onto to watch sport on Showmax.
I think for me, and the question I really want to ask you is because, you know, I'm a big NFL and NBA supporter, and we saw that on Christmas Day there was such a big shift now with everybody watching now the NFL, where they got significantly more viewers on the Netflix stream as opposed to the NBA games. Do you see a certain disruption into how we're now consuming sports holistically? And do you see that our traditional players in that sporting market do have a little bit of trouble in the horizon, you know, that's coming up in the future?
Yeah, look, I think if we were to look at the younger market, the younger kind of generation coming through, if I have to use myself as an example, yeah. I've got a six-year-old and an eight-year-old, and they know exactly how to operate Netflix. You know, they can toggle around on there. They can find whatever shows they want to watch. And in that space, you're going, if you are putting sport on there, where the consumer already is.
Yeah.
You're not going to an eight-year-old saying, please subscribe to this platform now because you want to watch the NFL, because you want to watch the NBA. You know, I think the consumption, the way we're consuming things, the way the younger generation are consuming things. Look at what Australian Open are doing at the moment.
Yeah, with the Wii.
Know, with the Wii.
Yeah.
That's completely thinking outside the box. And the content that's coming out of there that's going onto social media, I haven't watched one game on Wii, yeah. But I have seen hundreds of clips coming out of reactions, what the players are looking like,
yeah.
How they, you know, slamming their rackets on the floor. You're seeing those other content that's spinning off out of it.
Yeah.
So how we're consuming content is definitely changing.
Yeah.
Where we are as consumers has fragmented. Yeah. We're not just on one place. We're not just, you know, when Ben tuned into SABC, you know, and then had open view on Mnet
Top Sports.
To watch to watch
you all the
what was it, Super Rugby,
yeah.
Super 10,
Super 10.
You yeah. know, that the good old days.
Yeah.
You know, everyone had to tune in to one place to watch
yeah.
sport.
Yeah.
We had pay TV taking over that market with 10, 20 channels. When there's Olympic Games on, it looks like you can watch anything on Supersport. And now the streaming guys are moving into that space. Showmax in the southern local content has done really well. If we look, and the local success story is definitely Supersport Schools.
Yep.
Over 1 million subscribers now on that platform. It's free for the consumer. It's on the mobile for the parents to watch. And they're kind of aggregating views. They're not necessarily going, we want to put one derby, Grey Blum versus Paul Roos on there. They're going, let's put over 40,000 matches on there in a year and then aggregate those views. So that's kind of where the success stories are in the local market.
Yeah.
The American sport is an interesting one.
Yeah.
I know you're a massive American sport fan.
Yeah.
They have historically done really well because they've combined lifestyle and sport.
Mm.
It's not just been about what happens on the pitch.
Yeah.
There's music, there's an energy about it. There's, you know, if you're an NBA fan, you walk as an NBA fan.
Right.
You dress as an NBA fan. It's not just about the match that takes place.
Yeah.
And maybe in the local context, we can learn from that because we are still very much wait for Saturday's rugby match, watch it for 80 minutes.
Yeah.
And leave. There's no, you know, you don't walk out onto the street and go, that's a Lion supporter or that's a Shark supporter, just by the way that they interact and engage. Where the NBA have done that really well, where the NFL have done that well, is they've turned that into a lifestyle, which has been fascinating, and lots of learnings from that for the local market.
I think one thing I want to jump into is in terms of the global strategy, because we spoke about earlier about how Netflix tends to seed their content into various regions. Well, where we've seen now with the sports is most of the Netflix subscribers have access now into this live streaming. Started with the Jake Paul and Mike Tyson fight, which, you know, they had all their issues in terms of the streaming, but got significantly better into the NFL, you know, the broadcasting of that. Do you think them opening up, you know, their routers or their servers into the holistic global network was an intentional global strategy? Or is it like we just fell into that?
No, it's definitely intentional. I don't
yep.
think they do anything by just,
yep.
you know, default. I think that it's trial and error. It's, you know, even the Jake Paul fight, I think for them, they would say it was a success
yep.
because they could test.
Yep.
Yeah. And they could say, you know,
they aren't getting sued, right? There's no class action lawsuit.
No.
Exactly. So,
it's kind of like breach of contract. Like, here's the fight. If you like spinny circles,
if you like the buffering vibes, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that from a South African point of view is something that we're still battling with. Even if you watch a big match, the Arsenal Man United match this weekend on DStv Stream was also, you know, the quality wasn't great. It was coming in and going out, and it's, you know, getting all those people onto that platform at the same time when something happens, when, you know, Man United are potentially going to draw a match and then potentially taking it to penalties. All of a sudden, you've got massive amount of people, you know, pouring into that platform.
I don't know what game you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
So just to cut in there, you said something interesting about like how Formula One was basically changed because of Netflix.
Yep.
Netflix almost has, you know, the whole point of today's show was like, can Netflix go into sports and can they make it work? When I first thought about this, I thought about it from probably a very far too conventional standpoint that they're going to go and court rights holders. They're going to try and go the traditional ways. But these hosts can literally just do their own thing. They can do their own thing with sports. You said they came in and out, little things here and there. Yeah. It's like, what if they came to the URC and say, we're going to have Netflix, a Netflix weekend, where just for 1 week of the year, they do something special. You told me the other day, that whole Beyonce Bowl thing.
Yeah, I actually wanted to jump into the Beyonce Bowl, you know, segue when you were talking about, you know, the entertainment element and the actual game.
Yeah.
And I see such a big disruption into how the traditional elements of sports, such as the Super Bowl versus the Beyonce Bowl, which is got significantly high views once again because we had the Texans versus the Ravens, which was the great game, but majority of the non-sporting people came in to watch Beyonce Bowl. And everybody knew that was a direct hit at the Super Bowl because they've been going on back and forth about how big this Kendrick Lamar performance is going to be. But then you get arguably the biggest act in music right now, Beyonce, to put a stamp on, you know, on Netflix. And even better, tell Netflix that I'm going to shoot an ad. And they shot back at the streaming issue and you see Beyonce's advert saying that it'll be better this time. Do you think that, once again, this is a push in terms of that disruptive nature of where Netflix is going to play in that?
Yeah, 100%. I think that it's there for entertainment at the end of the day, right? And what people are going to tune in for, if it's going to be a, you know, Korean thriller, which, you know, in some ways is also some form of sport because it's gamification of something, or you tuning in to watch Beyonce, or you tuning in to watch, you know, content creators play golf,
yeah,
or you tuning in to, you know, watch Bryson DeChambeau hit a hole in one over his roof. Yeah. You know, it's some form of content, some form of entertainment, and we're tuning into different platforms all the time to get that form of entertainment, and you know, Netflix are realizing that they're building this audience of theirs, and so how can they keep growing, how can they keep expanding, how can they keep ensuring that their audience tunes in? Because they're not, you know, we're just speaking about Netflix, but there's, you know, you go onto your any smart TV now, the amount of platforms that we have now access to in South Africa, if we had this conversation 5-6 years ago versus, you know, now it's Apple, it's Disney, it's Prime, you know, the Amazons have launched in South Africa and they're here to stay. So Netflix realize we're not just the only players anymore, and the other players are coming really, really quickly. You know, the fast channels are going to be channels that are going to grow from an advertising point of view on platforms in the UK. We're seeing how much it's grown already, and that's something that can potentially, you know, change the game in the local context. If we've got advertising-backed streaming platforms where we don't have to pay a subscription for, we just get content, you know, and how can that play in the local market maybe more than paying R200 a month? Because depends on who you speak to. For a lot of people, R200 a month in South Africa and Africa is still a lot of money, even if you put Beyonce on there, you know, because I could probably wait 30, 40 minutes and the show will be on YouTube and I can watch it for free. So, you know, it's depends on when you want to watch it, how you want to watch it, where you want to consume it. And we've got this war going on between, you know, let me first get the consumer, let me get them to subscribe. But then the next question that a lot of these platforms are asking is, not necessarily viewership anymore, because if you go onto even YouTube now, you've got to watch for a couple of seconds, then you count it as a viewer.
Cool.
It's all around kind of keeping you on our platform.
Yeah.
and the consumption of content is what a lot of the platforms are reporting on now. So how many hours can I keep Ben on my platform? And if I'm going to keep him on there for series, and then he knows later there's going to be an NFL match, and then I know later there might be a boxing match, yep. and then maybe later, you know, somebody in his family wants to watch Beyonce on there. The consumption question is I guess, what we've got to start speaking about, and not necessarily subscribers or viewers. Yeah. It's, you know, how many times can I keep, or how long can I keep you on my platform? Yeah. Because then it opens up a whole range of other advertising options, sponsorship options. You know, then I can commercialize you as a consumer because I've got you on my platform for 5-6 hours a day.
Yeah, and I think for me, when we talked about earlier retention strategy, I think outside of the live, they've got such a deep bank now of sports, and you mentioned Drive to Survive. I think for me, that's probably one of the smartest retention strategies that they've got there. And, you know, we probably understand that a KPI is retention of consumer onto the channel, and having the live aspect with Beyonce Bowl, and then I can just quickly toggle through and watch Last Dance, I think for me is probably one of the smartest retention strategies in terms of just as a consumer.
So I think it's kind of unanimous that Netflix can create its own way around this. 100%. They can call the shots. They can create their own stuff. They'll never have the Super Bowl because it's cost a lot of money. They don't need that.
Yeah.
They'll create their own little things. So I've got a theory, Jean, and I want to run this by you. Now, the longer that we talk about this kind of stuff, it always comes back to Drive to Survive and how ahead of the time it was. It's like rights holders, so often it was like they were like the hot chick in the bar, so to speak, right?
Yeah, 100%.
They knew what they had, and they knew where all the suitors were.
Yeah.
And it was just about rocking up. But now we're seeing, like, because entertainment is so broad, and the URC, the PS, it all fits into what we just talked about now. You're competing against everything that has eyeballs. You're playing against Squid Games. You're not playing against Amazulu. Yep. So rights holders now, I'm going to use the UFC as an example because I always think they're very innovative. One of the biggest gripes around UFC is how damn expensive it is on pay-per-view. I think your average punter out there is probably paying like $80 or something stupid. Just imagine, just the number of events alone, once a month, you're in for $80. That's quite a lot of money. So I reckon there's a play where, what if UFC goes to Netflix and says, right, we're currently on, I don't know, it's ESPN with however many million. I'm going to hesitantly say 20-25 million captive kind of audience they can pitch to. Netflix is what, like more like 200? It's probably like 10 times the size of that, right? So UFC could go to someone like Netflix and say, you know what, guys, you're at this cusp right now where you're wanting to do more live sports, you're wanting to get more attention, low risk, it's got to be well packaged, it's got to be a sure thing. How about we stream only on Netflix now? Yep. And then we obviously have a big deal, and then our fans, who are the lifeblood of this, are not going to pay for the pay-per-views. There it is on Netflix. Now, I don't know what the money is, how it breaks down there. I'm sure there's a smart guy with a deal waiting to happen. But the UFC will win because suddenly their audience can 10x. Mm-hmm. Netflix wins because suddenly they've got an apex sport for live. And then ultimately the consumer wins because now it's like, cool, for however many dollars a month, I've got Netflix, I've got UFC now. I reckon it's deals like this in the future that could actually really make Netflix a sporting platform. What do you think?
You are a UFC fan, right?
Huge.
Yes.
So, but thanks to Super Sport, I don't know.
WhatsApp group to like Arsenal.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
No way, that should have been a burn. No, but yeah, big UFC fan, but thanks to Super Sport, I'm not paying out of my ass to watch it. But average people around the world pay huge amounts to watch UFC.
Yeah, I mean, I guess let's go back to starting off with the rights holder, and that's probably where sport is still with a Netflix debate around. The rights holder's got to decide how are they going to cut up their rights. Mm-hmm. And even in, let's just use English Premier League as an example. You know, there's even in the UK, it's more difficult to watch a Premier League game in the UK than what it is to watch it on Supersport.
Yeah, 100%.
Now, here you can watch everything.
Every game.
You know, there they've cut it up for different platforms. And then there's different regions that are usually cut up. You know, Supersport only has Africa. You know, you've got different broadcasters in different countries, different regions around the world. And so as those contracts potentially come up for renewal, that's when those conversations are going to start becoming interesting to say, okay, is a global play a better play? Does Netflix have the capacity and the capability to not crash? when there's a Arsenal Man United match playing, you know, as a FA Cup a match happening.
Third round. You guys will never get over it. Huh?
Premier League match happening, you know.
Carry on.
We are the defending champs, are we not?
Bro, just shout out for saying that. I appreciate you, John.
So, you know, I think the interesting discussion to put it into the UFC space is they've got to decide, are they a rights holder that can put on really good events, or are they a broadcaster, or are they both? WWE had a similar, you know, debate. They went direct to consumer, and they said, we want to go direct to consumer. Then they realized, we're not a broadcaster. Yep. We're an entertainment platform that can put on really good events. Let's get the broadcasters to the broadcasting and let them use their communities and their, you know, platforms to put it out to the world. And they've seen success in that space, and yeah, and you know, they're probably not going to go direct to consumer. And, you know, similar sort of with the English Premier League, it's a similar debate to UFC. They're probably the strongest league from a soccer football point of view, depending on where you are in the world.
Yeah, sure.
They could probably go, we want to go pay-per-view. Yeah. Would that be a good thing for them or a bad thing for them? You know, could they make more money? Would you tune into a, you know, West Ham match if you're not a West Ham fan, but, you know, because it's on SuperSport, you're going to tune in. So that reach versus return in terms of money, I guess, is the debate that the UFC are constantly having as well, and saying at this stage that it's still working for them and they're definitely making money off it. And then they still have a couple of broadcasters that are broadcasting it, so we can watch it locally. Where does that tipping point happen? And is Netflix the best one for them to go to? Because there's now a whole bunch of options. I think this whole, you know, sports movement of exclusivity is going to change. There's no more, you know, discussions around, I want this and only this. The rights holders are going to become, especially the rights holders that are in a powerful position, yep, UFC, English Premier League, you know, NFL, NBA, they can start controlling the conversations. The difficulty is for the rights holders like League One in France, or, you know, the Bundesliga to some extent, when your product on a global basis is not as popular anymore, then you just want to take, because then you, at least we're on a platform in Africa, yeah, and we're getting new fans somewhere. Even if we're not getting money, just put us on.
Yep.
So there's that debate around reach versus money versus, you know, where's the future of it going, sustainability of it going. I mean, taking it back to an NBA example, they've been leaders in that space of,
you know, selling the rights.
We were allowed to go, you know, NBA were the first ones to turn it around and say, fans, please come and record our matches and post it on social media.
Yep.
Where previously it was not allowed to record at matches, yep, you know, not allowed to take photos, yep, don't post those. Even with the Rugby World Cup, you know, 2 years ago, World Rugby was so strict with anyone posting anything about their tournament,
yeah,
which, you know, which in, I thought in my eyes is
it came
is
back
strange
to bite them. Yeah. It wasn't a good look.
Yeah.
Especially as, like, you need new markets for rugby in particular.
Yeah. Especially absolutely.
That one, yeah. So, yeah, it's a debate that keeps going round and round in circles. I guess the interesting one is this reach versus community versus retention, and the rights holders that are going to be are strong are going to have the options to, you know, not be exclusive and call the shots.
Yeah.
And then the rights holders that are, you know, behind the eight ball are going to be battling. And then they're not just battling against entertainment content. They're now battling against content creators that are creating their own content and creating their own sport content, you know.
Kind of goes full circle to my analogy about the hot chick in the bar there, really,
exactly,
with all of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
You now have 8-year-olds tuning into Mr. Beast.
Yeah, wait. You know? New analogy.
Yeah. I didn't know where that was going.
You've got 8-year-olds tuning into Mr. Beast playing a match or playing a fake match with a Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yep.
Yeah.
And hundreds of millions of views. You know, it's no longer waiting for URC or waiting for cricket or waiting for this to create a tournament. It's why don't we just create something ourselves and the fans will tune in. And that's the scary thing for pro tiers or
so. I mean, like that's what I really like, and I'm still not sold on this Tomorrow Golf League, but it speaks to that thing, right?
Yeah.
The PGA Tour the embattled PGA Tour need to do things so they can say, look, Liv, we're not just taking this sitting down.
Yeah.
And for better or for worse, teamed up with Tiger and Rory, and they've got this thing now.
Yeah.
Just like glorified indoor simulator golf. Pros love it. Yeah. As a spectacle, yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah, and I think I 100% agree with you, but I also wanted to throw back to Jean. Do you think traditional broadcasters need to start adapting to the entertainment value, back to the entertainment value of sports? Because I'm seeing, you know, we probably weren't the biggest fan of the Jake Paul and Mike Tyson fight, but you can't see a fight like that going onto a super sport, for example, because they kind of feel like they are purists, similar to what we talk about the PGA, similar to what we talk about those type of platforms. Do you think that the traditional broadcasters need to kind of sell out and give us a little bit more entertaining sports, as you know, the streaming services are giving us? Because a Beyonce Bowl doesn't look like it's going to exist on a super sport, for example.
Yeah, look, I think you're being harsh.
Okay.
I think that super sports are definitely moving in that direction from an entertainment point of view. And it's at this stage, you know, this toss-up between super sport get all the criticism, but they're just the broadcaster.
Yep.
You know, the rights holders in South Africa have got to, you know, come to the plate and come to the party. We're seeing now with the Betway SA20, yeah, it's, you know, doing really well.
Yes.
Quality of the matches are really good. The entertainment around there, full stadiums. Yeah. And now SuperSport are broadcasting it with their presenters standing in shorts and T-shirts. Yeah. And it looks like a party.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I guess SuperSport are always the one that gets the criticism to change. Mm-hmm. Next time you watch a rugby match, just change the commentary,
yep,
to, you know, cause a commentary, yep, and it'll be much more entertaining for you than, you know, just listening to same old, same old.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, the clips that go viral nowadays on about rugby.
Lines, yeah.
I've absolutely got to echo your sentiments there. I think also, we're in a field of making content ourselves.
100%.
And I think every time we watch our shows back and we think, there's only so much you can do. You've,
yeah,
got these high convoluted ideas of what you could do. And I think SuperSport actually do get it right. I think in the case of the Jake Paul, Mike Tyson thing,
yeah,
I don't think it's worth them trying to get the rights to that, because those are pay-per-view kind of things. That's where, cool, they make the money.
Yeah.
So I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong here, the only reason that hasn't happened for them is because it's just been out of their role.
Yeah.
I think if it was part of like a bundle they got with whoever else Jake Paul is beefing with, they might show it. But I don't think SuperSport are going to go out their way and say, you know what, this $100 million that we've got, we're going to make it rain on this fight.
Okay.
It doesn't really make. It's not going to move the needle on a subscription to then retain a guy for another year. I don't think that's the case at all.
Yeah.
John, there's so much I want to chat to you about that you've done in your own personal capacity around this kind of stuff. Because as much as we talk about Drive to Survive, as much as we talk about all these amazing things like Last Dance, Chasing the Sun was objectively amazing.
Best.
As a international production, as something that not only captivated the hearts of the viewers, but again, it took the sport further. Right? We all know rugby's great. I had no idea rugby was that great.
Yeah.
I had no idea that a guy like Rassie could be that great. I mean, you hear all these stories. When you were working at TNW, your involvement and your network in general, how is it that you guys got that so right? Because there was nothing. And then Chasing the Sun.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell us the rants and cents and all that kind of stuff, but just give us an insight. Like, how did it go from SuperSport's always been great, whistle to whistle, as they call it, whatever. Chasing the Sun came out of nowhere and blew us all away.
Yeah, look, the TNW creative team is unbelievable, and they really did a great job. But I think that the players, coaches, staff, SuperSport, the commercial partners that we had, and all bought in,
yep,
and all saw the vision of where it needed to go, and made it a success. The final TV product that goes on there, you know, credit's got to be given to the creative team at TNW,
yep,
for putting on a really high quality, creative, successful kind of TV show. But the players, if you look at Chasing the Sun 1 versus Chasing the Sun 2, they were nervous in Chasing the Sun 1. With Chasing the Sun 2, they realized the benefit of you know, yeah, what it is to build a brand.
Yeah.
And I've got to have a life after rugby. And so there was this openness around, I want to be on the show. Please get me on the show. Please can I be interviewed? please can we ensure that we get clips that we can share on our own social media platforms, which really took it from Chasing the Sun 1 to Chasing the Sun 2 and elevated it to kind of South Africa. And that was really kind of the buy-in of all the players, the buy-in of the coaching staff. And then, you know, you've got to have access. And so if you don't have access, you can't make a documentary. And so SA Rugby, Rusty, his team, getting that access, getting the behind-the-scenes clips is what really makes the documentary unbelievable. Getting the human stories of sitting in the change room crying by yourself, you know, those are the powerful stories that South Africans resonate with, or people resonate with around the world. So it's a collective.
You've constrained on my next question there, because I mean, a lot went into that, right? And it was like a flash out of the blue. It was like, wow, access, I'm seeing stuff, I'm seeing this new thing. Everything changes with sort of like the ways people consume content or want to see content. Now, with your role at Capitalized Media, I mean, is this like the kind of blueprint you guys think that sports content should go on now? Do you think there's a sort of ceiling to how much access you can get before people maybe get more stale with like players getting too familiar? I mean, I what's the sort of mindset towards that when you look at future commercial projects in the space?
Look, it definitely is. I mean, it takes a hell of a lot of funding to put something like that together. And so the broadcasters or the fans can't always fund that. You can't rely on SuperSport to fund that. So I guess the biggest benefit that we had with Chasing the Sun 2 is that we turned it into commercial opportunity and brought on three commercial partners and got them involved from day one of the documentary, involved in kind of question sets that the players are going to have, gave them exclusive content that they can use on their platforms. And so that branded content is for me where the success is of where it's going to go. Connecting a brand with a specific story, getting a brand to not just make a 30-second TV commercial, but getting that brand intrinsically, you know, involved in the story and not just slapping a logo on a screen and hoping that somebody goes to a restaurant because you've seen that logo, but asking specific questions to their values, to, you know, areas in their business that they can use that content for. That for me is the future of where it's going. And with my new role at Capitalized Media, it's still involved in kind of the bigger T&W group. And it's going to be a lot more on commercializing those documentaries moving forward, looking at campaigns. How do we turn even, you know, short form campaigns into branded content? But by branded, it's not let's put a logo on a screen and give a ROI to a brand. It's fans are not connecting with that anymore.
Absolutely. I mean, like we're very fortunate on this show to have Heineken and Clipdrift. I mean, the way I see it is like we couldn't get better sponsors. This isn't really a blatant plug. It's just that Heineken's got a history within Champions League football. Yeah. They've got a history within, we can get to actually now, they're still involved with rugby to a certain degree. Yeah. Clipdrift, like, those are rugby guys, you know, they're really involved. Yeah. And it almost just, it's kind of turning advertising on its head to go full circle with this, is that we're talking about shows, we're talking about sports, but money used to go into, like, cool things around brands, but then it's like, okay, well, our brand is in sports, it's being consumed, it's like a hallmark of this.
Yeah.
Branded content in your sphere, this is actually the most like normal thing to do now.
So you look at something like SuperSport Schools that is free for the consumer. Yeah. So it's taking away the subscription, it's taking away any of that kind of fee that the fan has to pay for, and now you're turning that into commercial assets that you can sell advertising in that space. And so the fans are getting more and more used to, it's okay. If I don't have to pay 100 Rand or 200 Rand or 300 Rand a month, I don't mind connecting with a brand because that brand, I feel loyal towards that brand because they're bringing me content that I want to watch, I want to connect with, I'm passionate about, and they are showing me that they're also passionate about that. So there's definitely that, how do we ensure that the fans, it's easier for the fans to consume it and it's not just behind a paywall, behind a subscription, and then still there's 30-second TV ads that come in and I'm going, I'm already paying. Now you want me to consume all of this stuff. Make it easy for the fans, and the fans will connect with your brands.
Yeah, it's good. It's a real good takeout on that.
That's a great takeout.
Sandile, is there anything else you wanted to go on Netflix?
Yes.
Because I want to get back to being ripped for being an Arsenal fan.
Okay, cool. I think, guys, for me, as we about to close off, as you know, I've been raving about Beyonce Ball. I've got to ask the two of you, can you guys give me your favorite Beyonce songs?
All right, and off the break, we get into the weekend preview.
You guys got to give me your favorite Beyonce songs.
Beyonce doesn't have five songs that are memorable enough.
Okay, give me one, guys, before the beehive come for us, guys.
I have one Beyonce song on my Spotify, so... John, while I find it, you can
Texas Hold'em.
No, it's a fucking annoying song.
My guy, Ben, no pressure.
That song is so... No. Sean's going to give you his five. I'm going to find the one that's
We can go with one.
We're going with one.
You give me one.
I've got two daughters, so it helps. You know?
Yeah, shout out. I'm going to go with Beyonce, Me, Myself, and I. I'm a real Beyonce fan
from
the
beginning.
That's not
so bad. That's actually a decent love song.
Yeah, it's not really a love song. That guy be trifling, but anyway... Ben, no pressure.
We don't just have sports fans listening to this.
No, 100%.
We're trying to bring buying into the entertainment fans.
You get me.
So, Dede, you must give five because you brought it up.
Okay, cool. I've got Crazy in Love, number one, my all-time favorite Beyonce song. And then I've got Me, Myself, and I. I don't know why all guys love this song. It goes up. And then I've got Bonnie and Clyde, Jay-Z, and Beyonce. They solidified themselves as a power couple, and then I'm going to take it back to Destiny's Child. Say my name, if nobody's around you. Say, baby, I love you. And then number five is going to be honorable mention, Irreplaceable. My girlfriend was going to kill me if I didn't mention that, so shout out.
I'm so glad you specified you had a girlfriend after all of that.
So if we have to look at that in the South African context, Beyonce Bowl, which South African artist would do a halftime show of a Soweto derby. And you would tune in to that, and it would
enhance the whole spectacle.
I'm going to enhance it, and it's, you know, Soweto derby for interest sake goes on Netflix, and now you want an artist for that derby's halftime show.
So that's a great question. I think I'm torn between two. It could be Black Coffee and Tyler. But I think Tyler, in terms of show spectacular, should probably kill it. And the global appeal of what she's doing right now. She's one of the biggest South African talents. And actually, you know what? I'm going to double down on it. I'm going to say Tyler in terms of pure show. She'll probably kill a halftime show at that level, at that scale.
Nice guy. Solid. Make that a cut down for socials. Doing my jobs here, hey? Norm's producer sitting in the corner here.
Saying, yeah.
Beyonce, Find Your Way Back. That's my favorite Beyonce
Shout
song.
Out. A deep cut.
That's it.
And that's us.
Spotify platform to find one quickly.
I told you I have one. All righty. We're going to take a small break and we come back with the weekend preview of all the sport, basically. We've got lots of rugby. There is lots of football, of course, because Premier League is back.
And it is back.
And Sandile's team, the 14th ranked one, is rearing to go.
The beaters of Arsenal Football Club. Don't forget that.
Welcome back. Another great sporting weekend. The Aussie Open has started, of course. Normally like second week, unless you're a diehard tennis fan. Like second week, you get into it.
How's your favorite juicer doing? I see it's getting serious for him, brother.
Alleged juicer. Alleged. All I know is that this is Novak's last dance. I called it last week. Yeah. I'm still sticking with his 7th seed, Novak Djokovic. He's still in it. Rudd, Rublev, and Tsitsipas, they're all gone, and the women's seed, so far, so good. But rugby, you know it's Investec Champions Cup right now, and I know we are sucking the hind teeth, so to speak, because SA are so new in this whole process of being a European club team. But Heineken released a team of the week from the Investec Champions Cup, and there's your guy, Sandile.
Oh.
Look who's number 10.
Oh,
Look
my
who's
boy.
Number 10.
You know what? You know, in this new era of me being a non-hater, shout out, Money Lubok. Clearly, you're on the right path. I think it's the Springboks that you can't do it at. So I'm going to give you a pass this week. You had a great game and you're in the team of the week.
Yeah, so the Storm is 9-10 and those the only South African franchise players in the team of the week, the Heineken team of the week. I mean, Dylan Lade is still in the mix, but of course, he's essentially French.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch the Investec Champions Cup last week?
Told you too much rugby and I'm starting to become like a... abuse child on that, so I am.
Okay.
I didn't tune in.
There's no right or wrong answers. Sean, how into this tournament are you?
Is it not amazing that we are not doing as well as what we want to? As Springbok fans, as rugby fans, for me it's great that it's a tournament where it's going to take us a few years. And yes, we keep using this whole thing of being new, but rugby's not new in South Africa, so we can't really use that as a new thing.
Well, I guess it's new in how our squads are stretched. Because in the past, it would be like Super Rugby, we know what we kind of got to do here.
Yeah.
It is kind of playing on two fronts. When you really put it into, genetically, most Afrikaans people over December and January are having braais and drinking brandy. You're now asking them to play rugby
throughout December the year. January. Yeah.
And that's a big core of a lot of these teams, okay? So we're still wrestling with this. Yep. I think it's going to take a bit of time because why is the Springboks so good? Legitimately have a squad of 30, right?
Yeah.
35, 40. Do the Stormers have that? Do the Bulls have that genuinely? So not yet.
Yeah, for me, my question is, if you look at the French and even some of the British teams, they're very international teams.
Yes.
And are we willing to, as South African franchises, become international, improve our squads by flying in a few Fijians and, you know, making sure that our teams our squads definitely have to be bigger. I agree there. We've got to have depth in our squads. We've got to have two or three squads. When Curry Cup comes around, there's going to be another tournament that we've got to start juggling. But are we willing to do that, where the French teams, you know, are very much 70-80% international players? You've got Argentinians in the mix. You've got the Islanders in the mix. You've got, you know, team players from across Europe playing in those teams. So where do we weigh that up? Are we willing to go international and then have a really strong win the Investec Champions Cup? Or do we want to, you know, improve our local franchise and be as strong as what we can and then have a really strong Springbok team, because our teams are playing against these international teams week in, week out.
I was going to say it's such a complex debate, because we talk about, you know, the Sharks and all the traditional teams trying to bring through talent. Are we bringing through talent purely for a Springbok perspective, or are we trying to grow the club and the franchise, where you've seen, like, for instance, in the EPL, where there are a whole bunch of the best players going to certain clubs for the sake of the club growing? And what's happening in the European rugby sense, and you know, when we go into this Investec Cup, you're seeing, like you're saying, international players playing for big international teams for the sake of that club making all that money. So do we need to change how we approach and the franchising? And for me, I really don't have the answer, because you can see how it's working for our Springbok development, but on a club level, we can't really compete at the Investec Cup.
But then if our clubs are stronger, by default, everyone will come up anyway. It's like the SA20.
Mm.
That's not a South African team. India's essentially renting South Africa right now for a month.
100%.
It's like we're an Airbnb to those Oaks now in all senses. But with those franchise teams, I mean, like that Luandre Porquito, whatever it is, that 18-year-old Oak.
Yeah.
He is just getting a chance to go bat with Joe Root. He's getting a chance to play with all these kind of guys. There's guys who are playing international talents right now is going to do wonders for them.
100%.
And the whole thing about development is that you can't develop like broad strokes. You're going to make two or three Oaks really stand out. So I would be more inclined to say, yes, let's make the clubs really fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
Get some Fijians in. I love that. Yeah. Get those kind of guys in if we've got the money for it.
100%. And I think it just needs to be a conscious focus. You know, we've been talking about, you know, this one tournament being such a big bogey in terms of the franchise standing. I think we need to give a focus, and I think one of the things is bringing in international players, like we're seeing with all the different formats that are currently in SA, talking about SA20. So yeah, it's actually a big credit to European teams in rugby that they're going with such a global appeal.
But it's maturity, right? It's time in the game. Like their whole thing is that they are there. They're a lot more cosmopolitan than we are. We are an outpost out here, guys. We're the bottom of the African continent. We are very much going to do our own things, and old habits will die hard. We can't just suddenly have proximity to be able to say, let's get that Irish guy, let's get the Italian guy.
Yeah.
Not going to quite be the same.
Would we as rugby fans in South Africa be willing to have a second team Springbok team playing because there's a franchise game clashing, or because our franchise players are more loyal to their clubs than what they are to their country?
And then it becomes like a football thing. See, it's like this balancing act between these two. We have to go more like football, but we have to maintain our rugby origins.
That's a great question.
Guys, this is an episode altogether.
Yeah, John is going to trigger us into something else.
Let's quickly run through what you need to know for the Investec Champions Cup this weekend. First up, the Bulls, they have a full-strength team, I'm sure, playing against Stade Français. That's at 3 o'clock on Saturday.
Yep.
Great way to start the weekend. Probably go to Stutbull afterwards. Pretoria offers so much. We've got Leinster at home to Bath. Leinster, of course, Ireland's big, big team. That'll be at 7:30. Racing 92, the French guys, they're taking on the Stormers at 10 o'clock. Whatever happened to Racing wanting to buy Marnie?
Say, look, Racing.
Like a year ago, they were keen on Marnie.
I'm against Racing buying any more South African players. After Masia Kolisi issues, they just feel like they're toxic energy to SA players. And coming off this World Cup, I don't know what they're going to do to money now. So keep whoever you got. Okay. I'm worried about your team. Do you think they're going to get hands again?
Stormers.
Yeah. As per usual.
As per usual. They won 40-0 last week.
Oh, flash in the pan.
Flash in the pan.
We gave them the Stormers and then we took it away on Sunday.
I can take it. Sunday, the Bordeaux Beglers, which just sounds like a really fancy bred dog, is taking on the Sharks. That'll be at 3 o'clock on Sunday. Toulouse, who everyone obviously loves because they are like, you know, picture like late 90s Man United when they were last good. That's what Toulouse is right now in a rugby sense. They are irresistible. They'll be taking on Leicester, which is obviously Andre Pollard's team, 5:15. Yeah. We need to get into English Premier League.
Yes, we do.
So, Sandile, big weekend for you.
Big week. I think even bigger weekend for
Sunday.
Austin. I think
14th ranked Man United taking on Brighton.
Anyway, before we get into that, let's get into Saturday's fixtures. We've got Newcastle versus Bournemouth.
Newcastle is still on the up and up, huh?
They're still, you know, coming off giving hands to Arsenal in that Carabao Cup. They're playing at half
it's
past
two legs.
They're
it's
playing
two
at
legs.
Half
it's
past
not
two.
Over yet.
They play at half past two. Interesting game is going to be Brentford versus Liverpool.
Brentford just got hammered by nobody in the FA Cup.
Yeah, but they lost, you know, last night they drew 2-2 against Man City, which was, you know, shocking, a shocking thing. So you got to show up as Liverpool humbly got shown yesterday as well. And then we've got Arsenal playing against their infamous bogey team, Aston Villa.
Bogey team. We took 3 points off them first round of the championship.
Wait, bogey team coming off, you know, you guys have got three major injuries now. With Jesus going down. How are you feeling? One, you got to go play Spurs in this week, and then you got to go play Villa.
Yeah, obviously there's that little bubble between where we record and where we get out to you guys. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's the Arsenal beating of Spurs. If we lose that one, it's going to sound terrible. Sandile, I'm not at all worried. I'm not at all worried because I think this is a team that has a much clearer sort of view of what they're doing now.
Where is this coming from?
They are focusing on the league. The Cups were a distraction. I think Havertz is going to turn it around. 2 goals from him at least. And ultimately, we're going to win that 1-3-1.
Flex, please remember this take. When we get to the end of this year, please remember the end of the take. Arsenal fans, I wish you nothing but the best. You are the children of the Lord, either way. We hope that something great happens to you. But from a Man United fan to you, I'd like to, you know, thank you for being so terrible this weekend and ensuring that another trophyless season happens.
You've already said thank you for that. You've got to stop living in the past, Sandile.
I just need to make sure. And then Sunday is a super, super important day as well for the EPL. We've got Nottingham Forest versus Southampton. How surprised are we at Nottingham Forest being legit title contenders?
I have nothing else to say.
After being docked a couple of points, they're back.
Yeah.
They have won a Champions League as well.
Yeah, back
guys,
in the
I've been getting the memes all week. There's only one team in the top four who hasn't won the Champions League.
Jean is coming back, guys. Don't worry. We're going to keep him around for all this Arsenal banter. And you know what? Forest, big shout out. They took points from Liverpool. So I think they're legit. I think they're going to take it down the line. And you know, like Leicester did, I think this is going to be a super exciting end to the EPL with them involved. Everton versus Spurs.
Sorry, you know what's also interesting about Nottingham Forest?
They beat us?
They've scored 0 points against Arsenal this season.
Whatever, man. Everton versus Spurs, nobody cares, but they're playing at 4 o'clock. Big game, Man United versus Brighton. Winds of change, as I keep on telling you, we are back and we mean business.
I still stand by what I said. Amarin should take on the big games, bring Van Persie back to manage like the smaller and younger games.
Roy, I know you miss Robin Van Persie because you wish was your striker on Sunday.
But really, Amarin picks himself up for the big games. He did it against Arsenal, obviously. He did it against Man City. He did it against Liverpool. Yeah. These kind of games, trouble though.
100%. The big games, look, we're probably, before this comes out, we're playing Southampton on Thursday. My goodness, wish me the best. And then
bottom team.
Ipswich versus Man City.
Yeah, I think we can just fast forward here. Okay, so look, then Chelsea play on Monday, blah, blah, blah. SA20. Let's wrap it up with SA20. No, we got UFC still.
Yep.
Okay, SA20. Jean, any surprises so far on what you think the teams have been performing like? Because Sunrisers, Eastern Cape, okay?
Yeah.
So they were looking for the three-peat from day one. They've looked quite shite.
Yeah.
First, like the question I had there was, do you think these teams are actually well-balanced or is there like a clear good one this year? Or is this the nature of how we bid and we get the players in, make us so competitive?
Look, I think that all the teams are really strong. we've got a lot more English players in the league this year, which is great to see, and it's probably made a lot of the teams other than Eastern Cape Sunrisers, better.
Which is odd because they got the most English, don't they? Yeah.
One or two.
They got an English coach.
Yeah.
I think the league's really well balanced. I think that the difficulty is the nature of this format. T20 cricket is, you have two bad overs and all of a sudden you get bowled out for 50.
Yeah.
So it is a long tournament. They've lost three on the trot, but there's still a lot of games that they've got to play. So, I think it's still too early to say if there's a clear favorite. The nice thing for me is to see that the Cape Town team finally are quite strong.
Finally. And Timo Brevens has come back because he was in the doldrums last year.
Yeah.
I'm just not convinced by their name of it's like,
Cape Town, that's my, yeah, no, I'm with you.
But the league in itself is really strong. It's in its third year now, and this year is a big year for them to kind of tick it over and go, now we're here to stay.
I love it. Like I said, and I was being serious, India, of course, is renting South Africa for a month. Yeah. But these teams feel like they've got an identity.
Yeah.
Yes, they've got the funny super giant Sunrisers name and all that kind of stuff, but I feel like these teams have an identity which I can really get behind. Like, I'm going to go home now. There'll be a game on.
Yeah.
Going to watch it. Can't say that about the IPL.
Cannot say that. And I was really surprised because we discussed the first game, the MI Cape Town and the EC Risers probably being the two guys who are going to lead in terms of winning it all. I'm so surprised EC Sunrise is so bad.
Yeah, but I think maybe their Proteus stars are just a bit overworked, a little bit jaded, a little bit too much responsibility on them perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm no expert at this kind of stuff. Friday, we've got Durban Super Giants versus the Eastern Cape Sunrisers, as we spoke about. Then Saturday, we've got Pretoria Capitals versus the Paarl Royals in the day game at 1 o'clock. MI Cape Town versus Joburg Super Kings. My team, go Joburg Super Kings.
Shout out. At
5:30. And then Sunday, Sunrisers again versus Durban Super Giants. So they've got like a bit of a double header kind of thing, which is a cool dynamic about the tournament as well.
Yeah.
All right, guys, I know we're going to finish off with the big one, UFC 311.
Oh, yeah, let's go, Vin.
Okay, so the great thing about UFC is that not only do you see Oaks Blixing each other, you see all kinds of skill sets coming to the fore. You get to see and learn about new names. So we're going to start off with the bantamweight title fight, okay, the co-main event. Mirab Dvalishvili, he'll be taking on Umar Nurmagomedov.
One take, Ben, before you even continue, shout out.
Umar Nurmagomedov is the cousin of Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Yeah.
Then the main fight, Islam Makhachev, who's like Khabib's protege. He is the lightweight champion, pound for pound best fighter in the whole sport. And he'll be taking on Arman Tsarukian. Now, they have fought before. Islam won, but Arman's come back with better hair, a better six-pack. He's from Armenia. Hard as nails. Those are your two main title fights for 311. There's actually a really, really great card. Even on the prelims, that young guy, Peyton Talbot, he's fighting again. So excited about this, but people are saying it might be a little bit boring because we've got ground and pounders, struggle cuddlers, call it what you want.
Struggle cuddlers.
Guys who basically go for the submission. But all of these Oaks know to be the best in UFC, they've had to learn striking. Islam Makhachev can pound and exchange with the best of them. And all these other Oaks, that can do the same. Of course, next month, Dricus du Plessis, Strickland, that's UFC 312.
Now we're back in the conversation.
Yes, now we're back into it, guys. I've gone out of the Balkans, and now we're talking about our guys. 312, Dricus du Plessis, it's all happening. It was his birthday this week. He grazed a knee yesterday. I mean, this Oak, it's all happening in his life right now.
Look, it's one of those fights that if you're not a fan of UFC, this is the fight that is going to get you into it. Think about World Cup final, that level. We're going to be super excited as South Africans.
It's huge.
It's going to be huge. And he's going to defend it.
Of course he will. Second round submission.
Yeah, and he's just, he's one of those athletes who, he's got such a big South African pull about him. And, guys, that's going to be the fight that you guys are going to get into UFC with.
The final fight that we're going to talk about is our poll for this week. TRN on the bounce.
Way to tie
this week's poll. The SA20, where are you at with this? You absolutely love it. You're going to sometimes watch a bit here and there. Or cricket sucks. Let's see how you feel about this. Go on to X and at TRN on the bounce. Give us a follow while you're at it. Our audience is still growing. And as you can tell by our handle, we got in quite late. But that is our poll for this week. Get involved. Of course, Sandile, thanks for being as always. John, thank you so much for bringing your expertise and your Arsenal bashing.
We love
much appreciated. and we'll catch you back next week.